The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
When the biblical writer James talked about saving your soul, certainly he was talking about salvation from hell, right? Well, let's find out on this episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Grace in Focus. We're currently in a series that we're calling Different Meanings of Saved, and we are exploring five different New Testament books that use the word saved and the word salvation in different ways. I think you'll find today's discussion interesting, and that's because it's led by Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Let's go right to it. Here's Grace in Focus.
Well, welcome back to the show. My name is Sean Lazar.
Hello, Sean. I'm having trouble with my headset, but I'm back.
But you're here.
I'm here.
And your name is Bob.
I am Bob. Oh, thank you.
And we're going through salvation in five different books of the New Testament. And the argument is, do not assume that salvation means the same thing every single time you read it in the Bible.
Right. But ironically, you might want to consider that it could mean the same thing in a given book, but not salvation from eternal condemnation, but a different type of salvation. In Philippians, we saw the salvation in Philippians is vindication at the judgment seat of Christ as a result of handling trials in a God-honoring fashion. Mm-hmm. The three uses all refer to handling trials well, so that we would have a future vindication at Christ's judgment seat. And now we're going to see in James, there are five uses of the verb sozo, to be saved, and none of these refer to eternal condemnation, even though many commentators think that most of them do.
Right. What's interesting about James is three of the five uses are fairly uncontroversial. Almost everyone recognizes that it doesn't have to do with heaven or hell.
I don't know, Sean. Clearly,
no.
One, 515.
And why 515?
We're going to look at it more in a minute, but well, in another show. But 515 is dealing with illness. And so pretty much everybody says that James 515 is that you would be healed.
Right. So it says, and the prayer of faith will save the sick, and the Lord will raise him up.
But now that's the New King James. Some translations say the prayer of faith will heal the sick.
Right. And because healing is within the range of meaning of soteria.
It is.
Or sozo.
Right.
Just as it is in English.
Exactly.
You know, the doctor saved me from, you know, an earache, or, you know, saved my life after a heart operation.
Right.
So that is clearly not a reference to hell.
Right. And now the other one, 412, is another one that some people do see as referring to heaven and hell, but I think a significant number of people see it as just physical life and physical death.
All right, so at least one verse is clearly about a physical deliverance. Let's see what the other verses say. And the very first use of salvation in James comes to us from 1:21. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. 1:21.
Therefore, lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls.
Now, some people, because they see the word souls,
save your soul.
Save
That's
your
gotta
soul.
Be heaven or hell, right?
Yeah. Now, I was interested. Jody Diller wrote a book called The Reign of the Servant Kings, and in it, he said, when you see the expression saving the soul, you should assume it's talking about deliverance from physical death, because
right.
That's the way it's commonly used. For example, in 1 Peter chapter 3, Paul says that Noah and a total of 8 souls were saved.
Right.
They're called 8 souls were saved. Well, it doesn't mean they were born again by going in the ark. It means they were physically saved.
Right.
And Paul, of course, in Acts 27, says if anyone leaves the ship, no one will be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's talking about salvation from shipwreck.
Right.
And so it's not so obvious that when you talk about salvation here in 1:21, that it's somehow talking about salvation from eternal condemnation.
Right, and, you know, that's common in English, too. I mean, anyone who's ever been in the Navy, if you say, you know, 8 souls were lost at sea, or
right.
7 souls were saved, you're not talking about a revival. You know, you're not talking about the
right.
the results of an evangelistic campaign. You're saying we save these guys from drowning.
Right, and that's another word study which we could do in the future, but the word for soul is the Greek word psuche. Mm-hmm. We get words like psychology, psychiatry, to psych someone out, psychosomatic, etc. And the psuche was one of the uses was simply life. One's physical life is also the psuche. For example, Jesus laid down his life for us. Right. That's the Greek word psuche.
Right.
He didn't lay down his eternal destiny for us.
Right.
He laid down his physical life for us. And here, the thing I think it's important to recognize is that the context brings out that this is not dealing with eternal condemnation. However, having said that, let me read a commentator who I think represents the view of many. James Adamson, in his commentary, 1976 commentary on the Epistle of James, he says this: the reference to salvation is to be interpreted in the light of the rapidly approaching Day of Judgment, see Acts 17:30. It is charged with the eschatological urgency of the New Testament, including conspicuously the Epistle of James. No soul can be called saved or lost until the final judgment. Hence, James's gospel of faith continuing at work in hope of the final approbation, chapter 1, verse 3. It is faith expressed in action that puts the power of the divine word into human life to the saving of the soul at the last judgment,
right,
end
so,
quote.
So he definitely sees this as, this is about your eternal destiny.
Right, and the problem with that is it completely sets the verses on their heads. Look up in the preceding context. How about, Sean, reading verses 16 through 18?
Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we might be the kind of first fruits of his creatures. Now, this bringing forth is eternal salvation.
Okay, that's my question for you. Is this, what is this bringing forth?
Isn't this a eternal salvation?
The new birth, right?
So that is the context.
Right. Now, who are the my beloved brethren in 16? Are those born-again people or not born-again people?
I'm assuming that these are born-again people.
And one way we would know it is verse 18, right?
Right.
In fact, the good and perfect gift he's talking about is the gift of everlasting life.
Right, and then
he's saying all the gifts we get that are good and perfect come from the Father, but then he gives the specific one that he has in mind,
right.
Which is being born again.
Right, and that's in verse 21 in our verse, the implanted word, that's an eternal salvation verse too, isn't it?
Well, okay, now let's think about that.
Okay.
But notice verse 19. It starts out with my beloved brethren. Does that sound familiar? That's what we saw in verse 16.
Right.
The Greek is the same in verse 16.
Right.
My beloved brethren in verse 19.
Right.
I have a friend who went to Dallas Seminary and got his doctorate about 15 years after I got my doctorate, and he got it in New Testament just like I did.
Right.
And he was visiting with one of the New Testament professors. And he said to the professor, do we agree that the my beloved brethren in 1:16 are born-again people? And the professor said, absolutely, because 1:18 makes that clear. They're born again.
Right.
And he said, do we agree that 1:19, my beloved brethren, is the same language as 1:16?
Yeah.
The professor said, absolutely. And he said, unless there's something to suggest that there'd been a shift in the people being addressed, wouldn't the logical conclusion be the people in 1:19 are born-again people?
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, now things got a little... He was like, well, yeah.
Right.
And he says, so then shouldn't we assume then that the salvation, which they're expecting to experience, well, what does it say in 1:21? The saving of their souls?
Uh-huh.
That would be the salvation of a born-again person. And this would be deliverance of a born-again person from the consequences of sin. And the professor said, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
And the student said, but doesn't that make sense? And he says, yeah, that makes sense. And he said, in fact, aren't we really forced to that conclusion? And he said, well, no. He said, I've been in print for quite a few decades on this, and I'm not going to change.
Mm.
Now, I wasn't there. Maybe the story didn't go that way, but that's shocking to me. And notice in 121, the therefore looks back at verses 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20.
Yeah.
And then when he says, laying aside all filthiness and abundance of evil, receiving the implanted word, yeah. I take the implanted word not to be the new birth,
okay.
but I think the implanted word, and this is subject to debate, but I think the implanted word is the word which had been implanted in the readers as they have heard the word of God taught week in, week out in their local church.
Okay.
So what he's saying is, by receiving it, apply what you've heard taught.
Yeah.
And if so, that will result in the saving of your life.
Now, I can imagine Catholic or Orthodox or Armenian person say, absolutely, these are regenerated people. And
right.
This is what they need to do to stay saved until the end.
And the thing I like about that, uh-huh. at least they see that they're obviously born again people.
Right.
In fact, when I go through Hebrews, I find Arminians like what I'm saying, except for the part that I say salvation is an eternal condemnation. And here, they're getting the idea right. The problem is they're missing what saving of the soul is. Saving of the soul is deliverance from God's judgment in this life. The believer who strays is going to be judged by God, and that's going to result ultimately in a shortening of life unless that believer repents.
All right, so a Catholic or a Church of Christ person would say, this salvation is conditional, and you could lose it. And you're saying, this salvation is conditional, you can lose it, but it's not eternal salvation, it's salvation in this life.
It's temporal, in time. Dang. But I think James 1:21 clearly is saying that we need to apply the word of God that is within us in order for us to be saved from the deadly consequences of sin, which, by the way, we don't have time to go into that, is brought out in 1:15.
Right. So
that sin produces death.
Right. We'll have to get into that next episode to flesh out the context here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening. And if you've enjoyed this discussion, be sure to check out previous episodes at our website or on iTunes or on Stitcher. That's Grace in Focus. Look for us. We really appreciate your support. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Thank you guys for that great discussion. Do you like what you're learning on the show? Well, there's more where that came from. We would love for you to come visit us at our website. It's faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. We've got all kinds of free resources on our site. One of which is really popular, is our free magazine. It comes out 6 times a year. It's full color and it's completely free. Subscribe on the website and it will show up in your mailbox hassle free. It's faithalone.org. Another reason to visit the site is to learn a little bit more about becoming a financial partner with Grace in Focus. All gifts are tax deductible and very much appreciated because it's how we stay on the air. You ever have one of those questions that keeps you up at night? I know that I do sometimes. Well, if you've got a question, comment, or feedback, we want to hear from you. Send us a message at radio@faithalone.org. radio@faithalone.org. On tomorrow's program, we're going to continue in our study of James, so join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society, and until next time, let's keep Grace in Focus.
The proceeding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.